friend.
Hey, friend, hey.
So, we're back.
We're back!
This would be season four, but we are doing something new. Some of you know. We are going to be dropping from here on out for the foreseeable future every other Monday.
Every other Monday. So that means you get to hear from us twice a month and you don't have these long breaks between seasons anymore.
Absolutely. So let's get to it because we have a lot to cover today. How was your summer?
Summer was eventful. I did some traveling. My grandmama turned 80. And so we took her to Punta Cana. She had no idea where she was going.
Isn't this amazing?
My aunt had gotten her and my granddaddy's passports renewed earlier in the year. So they knew they were going somewhere, but they had no idea where. And we pulled up to the airport and they're like, we never heard of Punta Cana, but let's go.
So cute.
So that was a lot of fun. I had Miami Swim Week, and that was great. I went to the Sports Illustrated show, and I just felt like I was in my element. You know I love Miami. We talk about this all the time. Then we had Fashion Week right before the end of summer, and I crashed hard. So I had a lot of highs, but that was definitely a low.
Yeah.
And how was your summer?
My summer was eventful. I would say some like pretty low lows, but also some highs as we all experience in big age. I lost a person who was very close to my family. She was my brother and my babysitter for our entire childhood. So that was hard. And some friendship challenges. We moved, which is amazing. But anyone who's moved knows that that can be stressful. Tashar, you know this. And one of my daughters was in an outpatient mental health program for the beginning of the summer, which was scary at first, but incredible.
She did so well,
which changed kind of how our summer looked, but we are so proud of her. And she, more importantly, she is so proud of herself and is thriving. And so I can't say anything but positive stuff. I also had surgery at the beginning of the summer, which just kind of was a hard way to start.
Yeah. Your hair looks really good, friend.
I'm sitting here
like, yeah, your whole presentation today, the aesthetic is a vibe.
Really? What's the vibe?
I think it's giving like art director at a really cool museum on the Lower East Side.
Oof.
Yeah, that's what it's giving me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, friend. I'm ever evolving and I totally receive this. Well, it's so good to be back.
It is so great to be here. I feel like for us, we have so many of these conversations not in front of a microphone, obviously. And so to be able to have them and share them with the community means a lot to us.
Yes, it does. And to all of you who've joined our community, our private community, thank you. There's a lot more to come there. For those of you who came to DC to our event at MM LaFleur, thank you.
It was lit, y'all. We have got to take this on the road because every time we have a live event, people are like, come to my city, come to my city. And so you all let us know in the comments, whether you're watching on YouTube or you're listening to the podcast, where should we go next? We love to hear from you.
Absolutely. And we love populating spaces that might not traditionally hold us. I think one of the things that we're starting to see is that people come to the podcast for a lot of different reasons from a lot of different places, but are really, really kind humans.
Yeah, and the diversity is really, really exciting.
MM LaFleur never saw that diversity before.
In all of the ways, right? In all of the ways, and so we're excited about that.
Yes. Okay.
Let's jump into the part of the podcast that we've always loved and you all love as well. It's the dumb shit people say segment that may be evolving here on out. Maybe dumb shit our parents told us, etc. But for today, it's dumb shit said by Senator Susan Collins. She's a Republican from Maine. And she, quote unquote, joked by saying that she would wear a bikini on the floor of the Senate following Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's directive that the body would no longer enforce a dress code for its members. So for folks who don't know this, for many, many years, obviously, probably since the institution was created, there was a dress code that all members had to adhere by. And I would imagine a lot of it also has to do with the way women's bodies are policed, but we may get into that in a bit. And so because the dress code is now being eliminated, Susan Collins said, I'm just going to wear a bikini because obviously these people don't like respect decorum in this institution.
She should.
Period.
Own her big age, aging body and show up in a bikini. That's what I say. I know that's not her intent, but who cares? Why is there a dress code?
So for her, she's saying it kind of sarcastically because she feels like, well, I might as well, since you people don't have any kind of respect about yourselves, right? She's not trying to be liberatory.
Well, you know, the origins of this, the way I understood it was because of Senator Fetterman from Pennsylvania, and he wanted to not wear a suit. Or something like that.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about the time, and I may have mentioned this during our live taping in Boston, that I was told that women should not wear pants to federal court, mm-hmm. right? As attorneys. And we do these mock oral arguments our first year, and I remember kind of pushing back on that. It was my civ pro professor who said this, civil procedure. And she was always in court. She worked for a big firm. And she was like, yeah, I never wear a pantsuit. I tell people not to wear pants. And I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. And back then, this was like 2007 or 2006. And my colleagues in my law school program had such a problem with me pushing back. And I think I was the only woman who wore pants to my oral argument that was like a mock argument before the federal court. Didn't do well in that class for obvious reasons, but that's just one of those things that even before I kind of develop the socio-political analysis that I have now, I never rocked with, because it always to me felt like this body policing and shaming that was just unfucking necessary. We're adults. People know how to show up to the Senate floor.
I also had a lot of issues with how I was expected to dress as a young attorney, and I was given very similar feedback. I think maybe in Boston it was a little bit different. Pantsuits were more acceptable, but I got a lot of feedback and heard a lot from older female attorneys not to wear tight pants, don't wear tight pants to work, don't wear tight pants to court. And this kind of pushback among towards younger lawyers of showing too much of their bodies or showing too much of their curves, maybe.
Yeah.
And I always kind of had this tension because I also love self-presentation and dressing. And I felt that the work clothes that I was expected to wear were very agendering.
Yes. Right? For sure.
Like navy, black.
Gray,
not tight, not loose, you know, like all very monolithic.
Yeah. Which doesn't allow people to show their individuality. No. Let's just be honest. And so it's interesting because this actually came up, Margot, this quote, because I was having a conversation with a client of mine who I've talked about before, Gwen's Girls in Pittsburgh. I helped to shepherd what's called their Black Girls Equity Alliance. And so we were having a conversation about dress codes in schools. And the young people are very clear that they do not want them in schools, that they're sexist, they hypersexualize Black girls especially. And it's so many comparisons to how we police young people's bodies and how that expectation goes through adulthood. And it's just so stifling. And I don't understand the purpose, because no matter what you wear, you're going to advocate or not as an elected official. You're going to be good at your job or you're not, whether you're in a bikini or a pantsuit. Similarly, when you're in school, you are going to be focused on your academics or you aren't. What you're wearing has nothing to do with your educational proficiency. There's so much data on that. And I would imagine the same thing is true about senators.
And we also know that when people, particularly young people, feel uncomfortable in their self-presentation, like when people are forcing them to wear dresses or forcing them to wear pants, right, that really can impact their psychological development. And so the downstream impact of that as adults. I also just think this is so stupid. Right. I mean, that's it.
It's just time out for it.
Right. Yeah. And I think the politicizing of every single thing as a way to get votes or make people feel less connected is really transparent.
Yeah, for sure. And we've talked about that so many times, right? Everyone is on this soapbox that is intended to rile up their base. Well, stay tuned, good people. We'll see if Susan Collins wears a bikini.
And if she does, good for her.
Good for her. I want to see her on the cover of Vogue. I mean, we
or
just
like
got to
Martha
do
Stewart.
It. Let's do it, damn it. It is time for our elders to represent the younger generations.
Show that fupa.
We need to see it.
Like, how are you holding up? Right? Like,
show us the asset, sis.
Right.
Many thanks to today's sponsor, Runway for Recovery. They are an amazing nonprofit that provides families with a continuum of support along their journey with breast cancer. They create community by hosting events and providing services that create joy and inspire hope. With shared understanding, they celebrate survivors, honor legacies, and they fund families. As a matter of fact, unlike most nonprofits focused on breast cancer, Runway is not oriented towards a cure. Instead, they seek to improve the lives of those who are currently affected by breast cancer by serving as a platform for them to access the resources, knowledge, and support that they need. They provide funding for guardians who have been diagnosed as stage 4 or for the children whose guardian has passed away. For their direct funding, they exist in a space that a lot of people don't necessarily want to address, which is bereavement and terminal diagnosis. Go to the link in our show notes to donate to Runway for Recovery. They are doing amazing work and deserve and need all of our support.
We don't have a lot of time, and I really want to get into this because I think it is a great way to start the conversation of the next phase of the podcast, which we hope continues to grow and reach more people and to have more difficult conversations, because that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, for sure. So you all, there are different, from what we've seen, groups of listeners, right, Margot? So for folks who are only listening to us, I think that's a particular demographic. There's some people who only watch us on YouTube. By the way, if you are on YouTube, please subscribe to Justice Podcast. And there are some people who only interact with us through social media, specifically Reels on Instagram. And we have a small TikTok presence that is growing as well, right? So it seems like there are four different audiences that don't always overlap. And there's something about Instagram and to a growing degree now TikTok, it brings out the trolls, boy. And even if it doesn't bring out trolls, because I identify a troll as someone who is intentionally trying to be hateful and provocative, it definitely brings out voices of dissent.
Yes. And it also frequently lacks nuance.
Mm-hmm.
Let's leave it at that.
Because to your point that it lacks nuance, it's also, I think, because folks who do not follow up, and we're not saying you have to, but folks who do not follow up to the full length episode and there's something that kind of like pings them on Instagram or on social media, they're taking a very small soundbite at the most 90 seconds is the max, for example, from a 45-minute episode or longer. Mm-hmm. So clearly, there's a lot of context that has been missing from the dialogue.
And for those who are listening or watching, people know this, that, you know, Tashira and I are intentionally having hard conversations around topics that are not necessarily straightforward. And Tashira's really funny. Right. And so there are lots of reels that we are able to pull from the whole episode that are funny.
Yes. And I think there's something also about the humor that is being lost on some people. But not everyone is going to be drawn to the same brand of kind of like wit, intellect, dry humor, whatever it may be, right? And so there have been times on social media that I've been saying things that have been 100% like insincere, me joking, although I'm deadpan when I'm saying it, I'm fucking joking. And people are like, Margot, be careful. Tashira's trying to get you to go to a sex club. And it's like, bitch, I've never been to a fucking sex club. It's a joke.
Well, it's also like we become the most extreme versions of ourselves on a platform, which I get to a certain extent, right? Like people want to place us in a box because people want to understand who we are, which thank you.
Yeah.
Right. And just like all of you, Tashira and I are nuanced humans who have, you know, dark sides, light sides, funny sides, sad sides.
Aspirational
sides.
Right?
Aspirations. Sides. We've had, we both have had health issues. We've both overcome things. And we've had a lot of different experiences, right? And so we are trying to have conversations around those from our different perspectives. And we want to engage with people about it because we think we are trying to pick topics that we think will resonate.
Absolutely.
I think what we've started to notice, though, is that a lot of the people maybe resonating are sometimes unkind.
So today's conversation, if you have not noticed, is about comment culture and just what that looks like in the age of social media, right? I think you and I talked about the fact that at one point, you had to be much more intentional, even if you weren't always the kindest, about what at least you were saying to someone with whom you disagreed, because you were like at home with a typewriter or you were sending an email, right, with your AOL dial-up as a letter to the editor. This was not a quick process that you wake up in the middle of the night, you go pee, you grab your phone and you write a hateful comment to someone, right? This took time. At this point, it's happening at lightning speed because of social media.
And people are responding, just to your point, people are watching and responding in the same moment.
Yeah, no, people, we aren't kind of sitting with the thought. We aren't questioning why it's making us uncomfortable. We're not questioning or like revising the comment. We're just kind of shooting off whatever comes to the top of our minds. And there's something maybe also about what we feel like is the anonymity of it all as well that's making us say things that we would never say to someone in real life.
And I remember when we decided to like really jump into this project together, and you of course already had your, you know, empire and were very active on social media, and I was not. And you sat me down and you said, "Margo, are you ready for people to come for you?" And I was. I don't know why. It really doesn't bother me. I mean, people have come for my clothes, how I talk, my body, my parenting, and the only time it's actually kind of felt like to my core, like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can like continue on, is when people really came for me about over-talking you as a form of white supremacy, right? That I wasn't respecting your voice. And I sat with that for a long time, and we've talked about it, and I received the message. I hope I'm doing better. And the idea that I could be doing something to harm my friend felt like I'm done. Yeah. I don't want to do anything to harm you ever.
Yeah.
But I think there's also kind of all this stuff that we want to share with you guys, because I don't think people fully understand how people interact in the comment section.
Exactly.
And why? Like, tell us why.
Lord. Okay. Leave a comment telling us why this is an issue, because for us as geriatric millennials, we find it fascinating. So can you tee up what is the kind of reel or social media piece that we posted between last season and this one that got the most feedback?
Right. So we've had about 3 or 4 reels that have gone completely bonkers viral. One from last season about you not paying your student loans, which obviously was a joke, and you're paying your student loans. And the one from season 3 that has done very, very well. It's had over 15,000 likes, almost 200,000 views, was about this culture of politeness we have. And the irony, and we're going to read some of the comments and dissect them. The irony of all of this to me is that this is a reel pulled from an episode that 99.99999% of people who watched it didn't even see, because this episode was only released to the private community.
Right. Wait, I don't even remember. What was the episode that it came from?
Value of Time.
It surely was. And it was about saying no and setting boundaries. It surely was.
And how that is a process and it evolves, and how we decide, like how we decide what our time is worth to us and to others.
Yeah.
And so there's also something else there, that there's like this jump to ascribe all this intent without having any idea what the context is.
But let me just say something. Shout out to us, because we just hit 12,000 followers on Instagram. This, by the way, is where it was posted. And to have 12,000 followers and to have this huge amount of likes and also views on a social media platform is almost unheard of. And so even if folks were being rude, being mean-spirited, possibly downright evil in the comments, the reality is the algorithm doesn't know good from bad. I could be writing Mary Had a Little Lamb over and over again. What the algorithm sees is there is interaction and engagement. And so I think our ability to choose sound bites that are going to land with people in some way and make them think and make them feel, we should give ourselves a lot of applause for Margot, because it demonstrates that kind of we're those cultural brokers that are at the pulse of this like current moment in society. I'm not saying we're giving CNN, I'm not saying we're giving MSNBC, but I feel like we really are. You know what I'm saying?
Cultural brokers. The universe is a mother.
I'm just saying, Justice is that girl. That's all I'm saying.
And yeah. I think there's a sub-conversation around that. I am obviously less adept at the algorithm, although I'm not so stupid to not understand that the algorithm is the algorithm. And, right, there's no priority on positive comments, constructive comments, or downright mean comments. And so I guess one could argue that we're benefiting at some level from some of these. But they're also just crazy.
We're going to jump into it, okay? How about we just go back and forth?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so this is, remember when you said that the thing that kind of really stuck with you was about the accusation of you over-talking me being a tenant of white supremacy, which I do not agree with, by the way. But the thing that stuck with me are the comments on this reel that accused me of pandering to your white fragility and also code switching. Let's take the latter. Because this is the thing that burns my biscuits. And for people like me who grew up being accused of talking white and having to kind of be between these two worlds of school and home, and people at home maybe not speaking in standard American English, but speaking in Black English, African-American vernacular, and at school speaking in a way that was considered to be white talk, was very difficult for me in my childhood. So this was actually very triggering to think that someone would accuse me of doing the thing that I was ridiculed and bullied about as a kid. So first of all, when you're making comments, think about how things land with other people, because you don't know what space you're going to meet them at in their life. But here's the first one. Someone said, so in the reel, I said that there is a culture of politeness that I have found in white communities. People took umbrage with that because they felt like I was being nice and I was not saying that white people lie. First of all fucking people lie, okay? And if I meant white lies, I would have said white lies. So I said what I fucking said. Let's just get that clear. But I was using white politeness because it's not just lies, it can also be a lack of transparency. And most importantly, it is a term of art in the DEI space when we talk about cultural norms that exist, especially in workplaces. So I was using that term intentionally. Someone says, a culture of politeness, laughing emoji, girl, bye. It's called lying, an art they have perfected through practice, since yoga was used in the example, which is another practice, just like anything else. Lying is a practice. It's all practice. A response to that person said, yeah, let's just cut to the chase. They be lying. Ironic that cis, talking about me, is actually engaging in white politeness. Notice her inflection when ending her sentences. It's literally what they do when they deflect from being direct. So the first comment I read has 278 likes. So just to put this in context, the second one has 6 likes. What say you, friend?
I think a lot of people just like missed the point, first of all. I feel terribly that this was triggering. Yeah. I think that is a really important piece that we have to talk about. Like, you never know what someone is walking with. So to assume someone's code switching or speaking a certain way or acting a certain way because they're trying to be something is just insinuating something that you have no idea about.
That you have no idea about. And also, this is my friend, you guys. That's how we got here. This is my sister. This is my family. And so just because I don't think I was doing up talk, but if that's what was perceived, if I was trying to be gentle in my point, so fucking what? You're my friend.
Well, the other part that maybe I'm not the right person to analyze, but when I think about you, Tashira, and I think about who you are and like everything you brought to this space, you're really fucking educated. So the fact that you speak with that as part of your identity is is just part of who you are. So I think it is kind of like damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you didn't speak like that and were using more vernacular, first of all, that's not, we met in law school. So there's lots of, like, we can deconstruct
again,
how we ended up
there. Again, there's a lot of nuance.
Right, like, we can deconstruct how we both ended up there. We both ended up there through different paths, right? Like, I was there through a fellowship where I was, like, their third choice. Tashira got in on her own merits, right? Like, we can talk about how we how the universe brought us together, but you graduated from Georgetown Law School, and you're a lawyer. You passed the bar the first time you tried.
I mean, thank you for reading my resume, friend. I appreciate it, because I feel like a lot of these hoes, they be playing with me. Put respect on my name. Exactly. Like, I'm not on the internet playing.
If right, I was, she's not playing a lawyer, right? She is a lawyer. She went to a much higher rated law school than I did, right? Like, so this idea
but
that...
But you arguably did much better than me.
So the idea that your... I think also it was upsetting to me that that was how people interpreted it, because it really devalued our relationship.
That's my thing, right? And so if you heard me kind of questioning myself as I was speaking, the point was not to engage in a politeness and not be direct. The point was, I'm actually working through my analysis as I'm speaking. And that's something that people who are articulate do.
Right. And the fact that you were... You know, we were talking about something where if we were in a different space in our relationship and we didn't know each other as well, or the context, right, you were worried about hurting my feelings.
Right.
So like, being gentle about that is a really kind thing, not a lying thing. So here's the other part that, so there was a lot of ascribing that to you. The thing that really got my goat is this assumption that I was not listening to you and being abusive. Right. So the context was that when Tashira comes to film, we film here in the greater Boston area. We are not yet at the point where we can put Tashira up in a 5-star hotel. So she typically stays in my daughter's room. And I try to go to early morning yoga sometimes. And it is one of the ways that I have healed myself. Mm-hmm. From a lot of the medical issues that I've had, and the one way that I've been able to move my body without hurting myself.
And you have a family and responsibility.
Right. So when I work out, I have to work out, just given our schedule, I have to work out before the girls wake up. Right. So I go to class at 5:30 or 6 in the morning, which to a lot of people sounds crazy. It is crazy, but I'm a morning person. Okay. And I have wanted to bring Tashira to yoga because this space has been a really important place for me over the last... My studio in particular has been an important place for me over the last couple of years. I've made some friends. I've created a community outside of my work that I was worried about. I was trained to teach. I have not taught yet, but all of these things. So it's been kind of this ongoing thing where we haven't found the time to go because we're so busy. And there have been nights where we're about to go to bed and I asked Tashira if she wants to come. Now, I ask, not expecting you to say yes, but just to let you know I'm going, because if I were to go without you knowing, I would feel bad that you wouldn't feel like you were invited.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, this is an interesting thing about ascribing intent.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me just read what some people have said about me. Why she keep asking her to 5 a.m. yoga when girl keeps saying no? That's a hostile act on repeat. Stop asking me. That comment got over 300 likes. And so this idea that me asking Tashira more than once, like you said no once, then I should have known forever that you were not interested in ever joining me. And I would like to have a conversation about that, because
yes,
as someone who has experienced FOMO in the past, I would feel really sad if you, like if you did something that maybe I was interested in, I said no once, and then you never invited me again. I can think of a couple things that in our relationship where yeah, that's happened.
Yeah.
Where I'm really grateful you've asked me again.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, it's not as if every time I saw you, you said, Tashira, 5 a.m. yoga, let's go, let's do it.
Be there or you're lazy.
Be there or be square, bitch. Like
you fat ass. Like, you lazy. Like, do you even care about your body and your wellness and your mind? Like,
namaste, ho.
Yeah.
Like, no. Maybe you've asked me 2, maybe 3 times.
How many times have you been to Boston in the last year?
Over a dozen.
Right. So, again, like, contextualize this, you guys, right? We all have lives. You know, Tashira and I see each other not that frequently, but when we do, we are trying to catch up on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing about it, too. Although I say no, it doesn't mean I won't ever go. It's just because there's so much going on, I'm usually exhausted. And I'm not as much of a morning person as you. By the time I wake up at your house, it's 7:30, and the house is in full go mode. You're on your second cup of coffee. You've written all the outlines for the episodes. You've read People magazine cover to cover. Like, you be on that shit. And I'm
three, four breakfasts, 3 lunches.
You see what I'm saying? Like, you move like a well-oiled machine in this bitch. And because I don't have that same lifestyle, it's difficult for me to be up and to be out of the house.
And for me, when Tashira is here or when I visit Tashira, you know, I am so impressed. Tashira, you get a lot of work done at night.
Yeah.
And I am just like non-functional past 8:30.
Yeah.
And so, again, these are the contexts in which we live in our lived experience.
Can we just talk about how you came to visit for the live taping and we went out for ramen late? And by late, it was maybe 9 o'clock when we got there.
Tashira, stop. Don't tell them. I was so tired, you guys.
For folks who are watching, who are listening, just imagine Margot like a zombie, like her head bobbling like her youngest daughter, Mari. I was like, are you drunk or high? No, when she gets tired, it's a wrap.
And I felt so bad, too, because, like, we had friends who were with us, and I, like, asked them a question about their work, and I was really interested. But it was so late, you guys. It was, like, 9:30. And so, to the point to Shira saying that when we're together, we get a lot done, we both internalize this work really differently.
For sure.
Right? And so there's just a lot of energy output. It's not like caloric output, but it's like we're on, we're focused, we're engaging with people. It is not something I'm used to, that level of energy. And so it's almost like a crash.
Yes. That happens. And it does. And so you're not being abusive. It is not a hostile act on repeat because you invite me to yoga. I mean, it's actually the antithesis of that. It's fucking yoga.
Okay. I'm going to read another comment. Two, actually. I'm going to incorporate 2 comments in one. 2 different people. This is a perfect expose of boss bitch culture. Talk soft with overpronunciation to whitey, but antagonize catty towards other sisters and treat black men like shit. What? And then one more, and then we can analyze. Her bald head ass, F-O-H.
Fuck out of here.
So let's deconstruct that.
Woo! Okay, so her bald head ass, fuck out of here, is just people who are misogynistic, who operate from a place of massage noir, and who just find it, I guess, entertaining and soothing to their own egos to attack feminine presenting people on the internet. So there's that contingent, right? But then there are people that say these things like the other person, which is all of these like thoughts and I don't know, larger societal, what they perceive as issues, subscribe to a 1.5-minute clip on the internet, boss bitch culture, treat black men like shit. You don't even know me.
And we weren't even talking about, we were talking about an interaction in our friendship. We are 2 women.
The narcissism of interjecting, this seems to be a cisgender man, by the way, but the narcissism of interjecting, like, your kind of identity group into a conversation that has nothing to do with you. Nobody's even fucking talking to you nor about you.
Yeah.
But I've offended you in some subconscious way.
So there's also this, so it is really interesting because of course it's hard to know who these people are. Are they, you know, and what are their actual beliefs other than sometimes being unkind? There are also a lot, by the way, of really kind, interesting comments.
Amen, please.
And constructive, which I'm down for. Let's continue having this conversation. We can disagree. We can agree. We can have different experiences around a singular issue, clearly, right? Because we all have our own lived experience. So these are just some, but it does feel like a lot of the criticism or physical criticism of you and me has come from men.
100%. Both of these comments came from what appears to be cisgender men that Margo just read. So, yes, I think attacking someone's analysis, but doing so through what they look like tends to be something that I think is very male-oriented on the internet in general from what I've seen.
Yeah, and it doesn't make any sense. So what are you saying? That if you look different or you self-presented differently, you could say this?
Her bald head ass, fuck out of here.
Like, if you had hair, you could have this analysis.
And also, there are many people who struggle with alopecia. I've gone through chemo before. Once again, going back to, you never know what brings someone to whatever clip you're seeing on the internet. You don't know how they're situated in the world, what they're going through. So to make a comment about my physical appearance is so fucking unnecessary.
And it's also something that we're trying to actively combat through this medium, right? We are talking about big age, deconstructing some of these social rules that have been placed on us, spoken and unspoken.
Yeah.
We're trying to be creative and self-present as the way we want to show up in the world. Yeah. So if that bothers you, then don't watch.
Then don't fucking watch. And most importantly, because I think a lot of the comments, just it has to be, right, numerically because of the number of followers we have versus likes and views, are coming from people who know nothing about the platform. They have not self-selected to be a part of our community. And so what I would say is, if we end up on someone's explore page and they disagree, why are you taking the time to comment? That is the thing about comment culture that is so perplexing to me.
Like, why waste your time? If you don't like something, move on.
Swipe on.
But I'm also interested in having some of these conversations, but not from a place of mean or, like, malicious intended speak.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So I can hear, like, okay, maybe I should know better. Like, Tashira is not a morning person. I shouldn't ask her to go to yoga if I go to an afternoon. I mean, it's this whole, the whole frame of this is so stupid. But, like, but I can receive that, right?
Yeah.
I know you're not a morning person. I shouldn't ask you to morning yoga.
Yeah.
I receive that. I won't ever ask you again. But that could have been the feedback.
And I can receive a query that might say, you said white politeness. Can you tell me the difference between white politeness and white lies? How are you making the distinction between the two? I'm confused. Oh, I didn't know there was a difference, right? There are a million of ways to have come to it with a spirit of, I think, questioning,
inquiry. And also, that would elicit a response like the one that you gave, right? About your training, about your intentionality, about the fact that you understand the distinction and you were saying what you meant versus assuming you were placating me because of my whiteness.
Yeah. Or the person who said, oh, this is why DEI doesn't work and I can give you a million resources to explain to you why. DM me. Bitch, do you know who the fuck you talking to? Like, Margo just ran my resume. I don't need for a person on the internet who teaches yoga, by the way. I went to her profile, so that was very interesting to me because she just kept at it in the comments, right? Like, I had to block her because it went on and on and on. Not to say yoga teachers cannot be brilliant, of course, but I am trained in what I do. I spent time as a community organizer while I was even in law school, right? I taught a political education class for years, y'all. I'm not playing on the internet. I might be humorous in my delivery, but my analysis is fucking concrete.
And it's what we do.
It's what we do for a living.
We have these hard conversations about what it means to be an ally, a co-conspirator, language, holding someone's space for someone's experiences, what it means to show up to work as your full self.
Exactly, exactly. And so again, if you don't know us, you are taking what we've said completely out of context of, one, the conversation, but two, out of our full humanness and who we are as people. And maybe it's too much to expect someone to be able to do that on the internet. So my question, Margo, is, What are the rules of engagement? Like, if we had to sit down in front of a group of people, I mean, we are virtually, what would we like to see?
So I think we would like to see serious inquiry.
Yeah.
And thoughtful inquiry. But wait, there's one more.
Oh, yeah. Read this one, please, girl.
Good Lord. Why does race even have to be mentioned? It's called taking care of yourself and setting a boundary. It's not that hard.
You're right. Race doesn't have to be mentioned. I think I would ignore the decimation of Native populations and the colonization of this country. I think we should ignore enslavement and the Maafa. Let's forget about racial apartheid and Jim Crow, Black codes, Reconstruction, the lack of 40 acres and a mule. Why do we care about mass incarceration, the school-to-prison pipeline, Margot? Those things have nothing to do with where we are today.
No human right to housing, food, safe transportation, safety.
Yeah, we live
dumpsters
completely devoid of any racial implications in our lives.
And I don't know if you've noticed, but we have the same mother. Dude, our podcast is about our friendship. One of us is Black and one of us is white. We're having hard conversations about race and gender in America.
Period.
That is part of the platform. We are talking about our racialized experiences showing up in the world. They're different.
They are different. And at times, what I hope, and that is what happened in this reel, I think for the folks who got it, is we're modeling cross-cultural conversation.
And I think for a lot of the white people, not that I can speak for white people in general, but I think for a lot of our white viewers, listeners, engagers who saw this, this really elicited a lot of self-inquiry.
Yes. Yes.
Because while some of this language is very popular, as we know in DEI speak and training, right, the notion of white lies and white politeness is something not all white people have fully understood.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing that I think when you talk about inquiry and when you talk about constructive comments, I learned a lot as well. So one person, as I went back through the comments recently, said, I wonder if some of this also has to do with whiteness and its proximity to wealth. Because they mentioned, I grew up in a poor white community and I actually didn't learn this. And I get looked at sideways because of my transparency. And it makes me think about all of these conversations that you and I have about like WASPy culture and what that looks like, right? Someone else said, I come from XYZ, you know, culture. It's very pervasive there as well. And so we're trying to understand and explore the role that race, culture, and socioeconomic status plays in our lives.
And academics. And industry and region.
Yes.
Right? So there's all of these things that impact what we're talking about and how we show up in conversation with one another.
Yes. Yes. And we are simply exploring them through the podcast. And I think, as we talked about earlier, Margo, if we're doing our jobs well, we're going to continue to get the trolls, the hate comments, the people that want to drag you, that want to drag me. I mean, that's what it means to have an opinion on the internet, I think.
Yeah, so I guess, I mean, I don't want to police people. That's not my intent. I think what I would request is that they don't assume we're coming from a malicious place as we interact with one another, because we are actually friends and we actually love each other and we actually want to have a conversation that people then can have in their own lives.
Absolutely. And I also, because I am on different platforms and I receive different levels of interaction and kind of internet hate depending on the platform, but I want to also encourage people to sit with a negative comment for a moment. Like, if you feel like you're saying something that may not be in alignment with a picture, with the reel, with the video, I would sit with that and I would say, number one, do I have to say this? Like, what benefit is the universe going to receive by me saying this? What benefit does this person receive by me saying this? Someone once told me that I was ashy and I needed to put on lotion in one of my videos. What good did that do me to hear that from you? I said, your mama ashy. Tell her she's ashy. You know, like, tell the person who would care about your opinion that, because that has done me no good in my life. So why did you feel a need to say that to me, right? So that's the first thing. And then I would say also, someone once told me that the thing that bothers me the most about someone else is that I'm afraid that they are my reflection.
I've heard this too.
Right? So what is it about what I said or done or what I look like that triggers a fear or a challenge or something in you that you don't like? There's unrest in you. That's why you're projecting it upon me.
Well, it's also, yes. And I think about kind of some of the more negative comments that we've received about our bodies, right? And outside of the ones that kind of ascribe kind of patriarchal intent, like the ones that are most critical of our bodies, our self-presentation, are often from women.
Yeah.
And that is very interesting to me because that is like, what about me, you presenting in the way that we do bothers you? Like, if you don't think I should wear a certain thing, you don't have to wear that.
You don't. And what is it about the thing that is triggering something in you? Do you think that the thing is not, it doesn't ascribe to the patriarchy enough and that's what you're pandering towards?
Or the fact that, you know, we don't look a certain way, but we're dressing a certain way.
Yeah, exactly. I once heard someone say, and I love this idea, they said, how to dress in your 40s. They said, number one, be in your 40s. Number two, get dressed. That's all it takes, right? It is no rules around presentation. And I hope that we display that. For folks who are listening, I'm wearing a crop top today and I am 41 whole years old. I will hopefully be buried in one. That is just the way.
I'll make sure of it.
Thank you,
although
friend.
You're obviously outliving me. I think however you want is what you should do.
And please keep that in mind as you are commenting on the internet. And also, the last thing I'll say about this, Margot, is that we do, and people who are similarly situated, do things that other people are really fucking afraid of. They're so afraid of being vulnerable. We've talked about mental health, physical challenges, my fucking sex life, right? Dating, breakup, marriages, relationship, careers, quitting, family. Openly to the world.
Cults, drugs, sex, right? We're doing this not for our own, like we've had these conversations before and you've had them too. So we're doing it as a way to kind of continue to have this in public, to bring this to the surface because we know that these are things that hit hard for some of us in big age.
And that we're not talking about it enough. And I think it takes a lot of courage and vulnerability to be on any platform. I don't care if you're, you know, in your bedroom at night writing a blog post that 10 people read. At the end of the day, you are putting yourself out into the world. Mm-hmm. And so shout out to people who are doing this type of work and who are exposing themselves in this way because it's not easy and we see you. And I think what Margot and I are asking for, it's just a little bit more of like critical thinking and kindness. That's all.
That's all. I mean, I think to that point, Tashara, right? Like this next phase of the podcast is going to dive even deeper into some of those harder to talk about subjects, right? Like I'm about to get my ovaries removed. I'm going to be on HRTs. I'm bringing that to the conversation because a lot of women in big age have to deal with having surgical menopause, right? It's not what anyone like grows up thinking is going to happen,
yeah.
Right? I'm going to have a revision of my breast surgery that went a little awry. Again, like it's not that I want to share this with the world, but I've experienced something that I think will be of value in this very specific way.
Yeah. And for me, sharing also gives meaning to a lot of my struggles. You know, I think it's a way, and I'm not saying this is for everyone, but the way that my spirituality is set up, I have to give purpose to the pain to keep on going.
And yeah, so that I'm going to like share. Show everyone how you don't have to have a dry vagina.
Period.
Right. I will be your guinea pig.
We need this, Margo. Thank you.
Right. Like, so there you go.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We deserve to have some fun in big age. And like, there is no roadmap for that. That's one type of fun, obviously. Yeah. But I think to Tashara's point, she and I kind of have some innate ability to share that gives us purpose. Yeah. That is not about fame or acclaim. It's more about if we can share and have these conversations that are not hard for us to have, that it can make it easier for someone else, then we're doing our service.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what it's about. Our platform is mission driven and we don't always get it right.
No.
But, you know, again, folks will put respect on our names because I get a clap back a quarter. And you know, Margot, my mouth is real reckless and I be trying to rein it in. But I actually have a TikTok that went viral that a lot of other content creators would never say, but behind the scenes, they've been like, thank you so much for saying it. Where I was like, I'm not made for the internet. I'm made for the streets. I will pull up on you. Keep on with the hoo rah 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 shit and it's gonna be a motherfucking problem. And one thing I know is that I do not play about people I love. So I would urge people to be mindful of what comes out of your mouth about Margot Catherine Lindauer. And that's the bad on that.
Wow, no one's ever pulled up for me before.
Because I will pull the fuck up. Turn on your location.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
But we don't believe in guns.
We don't believe in guns. We don't. And when I say pull up, I mean that metaphorically, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, good people. It feels so good to be back. And I just can't wait for all that we have in store for people, especially with these bi-weekly episodes, mm-hmm. right?
So if you have topic ideas, questions, put them in the comments. We're always actively creating ongoing episode topics. So if there's something that we haven't touched on or you want to follow up on, let us know.
Let's get ready. Let's do it, y'all.
Have a good week, everyone.